Chapter 24. It was no secret to you, or to anybody in the claustrophobic, smothering schoolroom that was the Mithraeum, that Ianthe's sword-fighting training was at the end of the line. The Saint of Patience had none left for her. Her ineptitude would have been a negligible problem had it not continued when Ianthe was in the river, had her doubts not gummed up the mechanism of Nibirius Turn's mindless sword arm. You had watched the submerged Ianthe's strong, upright, boyish posture flounder as the right arm dropped the sword. A psychological block, certainly, but one projected into the dead soul that stood to defend her body when the mind went voyaging. There was more pressure on her than on you. The eyes that fell on you were now less critical, because in those eyes you were a woman already dead. Your 18th birthday passed without anyone noticing, even you. One night before you went to sleep, you thought to yourself, restlessly, another year. You recalled it as you always did, the memorial to the 200 who had died seizing, kicking and choking as their neurotransmitters were poisoned into overdrive. You silently begged them to stay their hands, as you always did. You never asked for forgiveness. Then you slept. Most people would have iced a cake or something. It was soon after your 17th year passed that you acknowledged a truth you had known for some time. Autus the First had to die. His ninth house name no longer bothered you, now that you knew about Anastasia. It seemed reasonable that the foundress, responsible for establishing many of your house's naming conventions, had chosen to honour her fellow lictors in the days before their names were veiled in holy secrecy. It was just a banal and uncomfortable coincidence, as though he'd carried the name of a dead childhood pet. The Saint of Duty's death went from option to necessity the day you realised his true power. Your narrow foyer was a necromancer's dream, easy to ward and to ward thoroughly. You had washed the whole little vestibule with a gossamer-thin layer of regrowing ash and pressed bone of each type into holes in the walls. On breach, anyone passing through would have their arms ripped from their sockets and their legs whirlpooled down into deep bogs of boiling hot bone that crept up their bodies like incendiary gel. To follow up, they would be run through with 4,987 sharpened, flexible needles of your own temporal bone, unbreakable, reactive, instant. Only an idiot would have stopped there. Your quarters had windows. If you had wanted to invade anyone's space, you would have put on a haz. You knew a real lictor didn't even need that. Crawled over the outside of the habitation ring and found the inevitable gap in the room's armour. There were no such gaps in your quarters. You had studied the floor plan and spent hours perched atop a ladder of skeletons, sliding hot gobbets of your blood and spit into the crawl spaces above the wall panels. You had stood at the docking bay and opened the airlock on a sack of bones and walked back inside with them, pattering parallel over the outside hull as you guided them to your windows and warded the plex with them. You had sent them down the plug holes in your pump sink and in the shining white edifice of the tub. You got the beginnings of a tension headache merely from the ward's reaction to Ianthe Tridentarius visiting your bedroom. If she had noticed the fine bone dust you'd blown all over her clothes, a glitter of thanagy on all her robes, she had not said a word, which made you suspect that she knew and was doing worse to you in secret. You'd found none of her traps, and it made you jittery. Naturally, none of your spaces could be considered safe. You slept with your sword in your arms. You often woke yourself up suddenly to practice how quickly you could throw yourself into action. Without a properly ingested cavalier, you had only yourself to rely on, You had to work 9 times harder. But you thought you at least knew your vulnerabilities. You were 18 years old now, and a lictor of the first house. But in some secret chamber of your heart, you clung grimly to the ways of the ninth. Despite Dead Harrow's insistence that you become a generalist, you were, on first instinct, a bone magician. Your wards were bone wards, to some extent, blood wards. It was not that you did not account for spirit magicians. You had reasonably warded for everything, for every scenario, both certain and uncertain. But your magic was at its heart still the magic of a ninth house necromancer. This was your downfall. You were in the bath when it happened. The Mithraeum's quaint bathrooms had no sonic appliances. You could only bathe in water, which you had grown to accept. Ianthe openly enjoyed it and kept saying you weren't running it hot enough. But you did not quite believe that hot water wasn't injurious. You bathed in a few centimetres of water somewhat below blood temperature, wrapped in your exoskeleton and behind your multiplicity of bone wards, and for some benighted reason, you considered yourself safe. The central ward in your bathroom was near the light fixture, where the protruding light made the ceiling tiles fragile and non-contiguous. You did not notice anything amiss until you saw fine grey grains in your bathwater, until you cupped this water in your palm, thinking it was soap, or that you were unusually dirty. Even when you saw the soft trickle of dying, pulverized bone drifting down from your ceiling ward, you still did not fully comprehend. The milled bone lay in your hands, unresponsive and inert. Only when you tried to join it together did you realize it was dead, in the way only the oldest bones in the most historical part of the monument of Dreaber were dead. The bones whose remnant thanergy had trickled out of them over nearly 10,000 years, like water from a pinhole in a bucket, leaving behind calcium dust too far gone to answer a necromancer. If the bones interred in the Mithraeum had been subject to time's full ravages, not stalled by the gentle touch of the Prince Undying, only their most ancient stratum would have resembled the specks in your hands. It took perhaps 5 seconds from speck to trickle to realization. Your wards had been destroyed. And then you heard a crash from the foyer, and then your bathroom door exploded open. Your immediate reaction was to cocoon yourself in a thick shell of tendon-fused bone. This would have been a good trick if it had worked. Nothing responded. Your exoskeleton slid off your body as though embarrassed by you. The bone studs in your ears were numb. The bone chips you kept tucked in niches throughout the bathroom did not twitch as you pulled on them. Every bone in reach was dormant and immobile. You were far more naked than if you had simply taken off all your clothes, which you had in fact also done. And the Saint of Duty stood in the doorway with his spear and his sword, and his tender green eyes in his hard concrete face, as though your wards were nothing. He drew back his arm and hurled his spear at your heart. You flung yourself so violently to the right that the entire tub swayed and tipped onto its side with an enormous porcelain crack and a rush of tepid water that sluiced across the tiles to lap against the toes of his boots. The sword you had balanced across the bath, its bones scabbard flaking away in chunks like the candied coating from a sweet, clattered onto the floor. You grabbed for it, but he stepped forward and kicked it away. You were grovelling in 0.5 centimetre of soapy water and gritty skeletal residue at the feet of your assassin. The spear he had thrown and the sword you could barely use were out of your reach. Your layers of traps and contingency plans had been rendered abruptly useless. You were soaking wet and you were naked. It was probably desperation that saved your life. You had trained your whole necromantic career to move for space, to fight from a distance. The lictor must have anticipated that. He had seen you do it before. He did not anticipate you throwing yourself at him with the only biddable bone you had left, which was your own. Great spurs burst through the heels of your hands from your carpal bones, and you slashed wildly at his chest, at his face, at the arm holding the crimson-ribboned rapier. You had extended your curved, bloodied talons of trapezoid and capitate into him, through the fabric of his shabby shirt, into the meat of his pectoral muscles, before he bounced your head back against the door jamb. The back of your skull smashed into the steel casing, but he was falling back, and he was taking you with him. As Ortus staggered over the threshold into the bedroom, you had a split second's perception of your broken wards lying in heaps and desiccated clumps by the door, your regenerating ash all dried up on the threshold like so many ancient clags. He dropped his sword to wrench your claws out of his chest, and you understood what he had done. He took your bloody spurs between his fingers, and the blood fell away into powder as he stripped away the thanagy. He did not absorb it or try to turn it back on you. He simply undid it with the dismissive ease of upending a jug of water over a drain. The spikes of living bone, freshly grown from your own body, faded in seconds into brittle twigs. They snapped off in his hands and he tossed them aside. You were dazed. You were horrified. The sword was in his hand again, vaulted neatly back into his grip by the blood streaming down his arm. He was too close to bring the blade to bear, so he simply swung the butt hard into the side of your face. Your cheeks staved in. You felt your jaw splinter and a couple of teeth tumbled loose in your mouth like ragged little dice. You staggered away with the force of the blow. He stepped clear and sliced inward and down, opening you somewhere under the ribs, and you spat in his face. The blood sprayed feebly from your lips and spattered to the floor. The teeth, on the other hand, hung in the air for a moment, blossoming into perfect four-pronged flowers of sharp enamel, each one angled toward a verdant eye. You shot those teeth forward like bullets. They flew as you fell sideways, your balance lost. You could feel the depression fracture at the back of your skull. You could feel your brachial arteries spraying, panicked. Your collapse against the wall meant you did not see what happened next. Neither, however, did he. There was an unpleasant, wet sound as tooth met eye. Ortus did not cry out in pain. You might have respected that, once. He merely turned away, his sword in his hand and the spear dragging behind him, and exploded back out through your ravished front door, your untidy, ward-strewn foyer. You were left slick with bathwater, wet with blood, half dead and dismayed on the floor outside your bathroom. The injuries could be seen to. Arteries could be stanched, then snapped back together. Meat could be sewn up and skin made whole. Dentine was easily reconstructed, and so was enamel, though you might have to reform your jaw a few times before your bite was correct. Nothing cracked in your skull had driven itself into your brain, and the bleeding could be corrected. But your peace was gone forever. The saint of duty could bypass your wards at any time. The saint of duty was a thanagy void. The saint of duty was the ultimate nemesis of a bone adept. You would never be able to sleep again. It was at this point that someone, obviously drawn by the noise from down the corridor, tiptoed over the mess at your front door and peered inside. You did not have to feel her presence to know it was her. You knew the sound of her shoes. "Hara," Ianthe ventured, from somewhere near the door. Then she obviously stopped and saw you naked, bloodied, flayed in your own anguish, with soap suds still on your feet. You hallucinated that you could smell her. Sweat, musk, vetiver. You saw your probable future clearly. You had not until that point understood the danger. If Ianthe Tridentarius knelt beside you then, no matter with what sugary contempt or filigreed third condescension, you would press your diminished bloody terror into her. You would creep naked into her lap shamelessly and weep. You would crawl like a worm to whatever clinging scrap of solace she would give you. All your slithering, degraded desperation for condolence you would give to your sister Licta with a brazen thirst that you would never come back from. She would be your end, as surely as the hammer to the oxygen sealant machine of your childhood. You would have reached for her with the mindless desire of an infectious disease. You would have whored yourself to her as necrosis to a wound. So, maybe it was for the best that after a pregnant pause, the Princess of Ida said, "Wow, not how I imagined this happening at all." And you heard her hasty footsteps retreat, away, back down the corridor whence she came. Then she was gone. You lay prone on the cool black tiles, staring up at the smears on the ceiling where your wards had been, dazed and despairing, nearly too dead to sew yourself back up. In the back of your head you heard the Secundarius bell pealing. Pealing. Extents beyond any ninth sacred composition, and never called by any tomb ringer. Aloud, you said through swollen lips, "The saint of duty must die." And on the bed, the body said, "Yes."